You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
December 1st, 2018. Excuse me. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the rainy, yes, I said rainy, Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will also visit and subscribe to spingolaspeaks.net. ScreeningSandyHook.net and WoollysBlog.blogspot.com. During the program, email questions or comments to Spingola, no S at the end of comment, comment at Spingola.email. Please visit the chat room at Spingola.chatango.com. View our past, current, and future guest lineup at Spingola.com. You will find the schedule all the way back to October 23rd, 2010, the day that I began broadcasting on RBN. I will open today's program with a question from a listener. He is someone who typically asks some very thought-provoking questions. He wrote, "Why is it that in America, American and European public and private schools, it's okay for students to wear t-shirts honoring Marx, Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin? But kids, I'll say children, but children wearing shirts which honor Hitler and the German nationalist movement are sent home with threats to the parents that they must not allow their children to attend school wearing such clothing." My guest today is Benton L. Bradbury. He is the author of The Myth of German Villainy, which was published in 2012. I bought the Kindle version when it was published. I read it then, and in the last 3 or so days, I have been rereading it, and I'm just as impressed as when I read it the first time. Ben, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be on your program.
It's an honor. Okay? Yes, it's an honor to have you. I've written to you before, and I think my email must have got lost in cyberspace. But it is such an honor to have you on the program. Your research is absolutely impeccable and so impressive. And I note, and I put it on the schedule page, that you have been censored by Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and IndieBound, as well as others. But a person may buy your book, an e-book, for $3.03. But Amazon forgot to do one thing. They forgot to censor the 275 customer reviews. And 250 of them are very positive. So I have a link on my schedule page where people may read the customer reviews. And of course, you can buy the book at A Books, ABE Books, Better World Books, and other places. And I know that there is a PDF file of your book afloat somewhere on the internet, but I believe that people should be paid for their work. So I would discourage people from passing the PDF around, because I think that you worked very hard to produce your book, and I would like to see you benefit financially for it.
Yeah, thank you.
Because you've certainly been chastised and criticized for your work. So anyway, I'm so honored to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. I'm surprised that it took Amazon so long to get around to me. It's been 6 years now.
Yes, I am amazed. And it was all because of this stupid map that they say was a copyrighted map of Khazaria, when, in fact, most maps are copyright-free. But I don't think it, trust me, it didn't have anything whatsoever to do with the map. And
don't you think that might have just been a pretext?
Oh, absolutely. See, because the publisher, whether it's Author Solutions, who was public? Author Solutions and Trafford and what is the name of the company?
Author House.
They're all the same. They're all the same company. And I published my books through Trafford. And they were very, very, very careful with particularly the last book the book before the last one that I published. Well, even the last one. My gosh, they were just very, very careful about not using any copyrighted material. And in fact, they would not allow me to use any copyrighted material, even if there was the slightest question. This has nothing whatsoever to do with a stupid map. This has everything to do with everything else you put in the book. Because if this information becomes widely known, it's not going to be good. But they do have one thing on their side. The publishers, Amazon, and the rest of the people who seek to censor people like you, is that most people don't read, and it's unfortunate that many people don't read. But I'm a reader. I'm a book junkie.
Yeah, me too.
I can tell. I can tell. So let's talk about your book. As I said, it's just an amazing, amazing book. And everything about it is good. The picture on the front is so appropriate. The name is so appropriate. Why? And your background. Your background is very, well, you were a pilot in the U.S. Navy from 1955 to 1977. You saw a lot of the world. You aren't just some amateur person who decided to write a book. You had done a lot of traveling around Europe and Germany, which you stated is your favorite country, and you always found the German people to be pleasant, industrious, disciplined, civilized, like many traditional Americans.
Exactly. They're very like Americans. They are the old-fashioned Americans, I should say.
Yes. I have German ancestry in my background. Some of my ancestors came over in the late 1700s from Germany. And Danish, English, Irish, and German. So you have the background required or conducive to publishing this book. But what made you decide that you wanted to do this?
Well, you said you're a reader, and so am I, and have been since I was a teenager. I guess a serial reader, one book after another. And if you get exposed to a lot of information, you start to learn things. And I grew up, of course, and I was born in 1937, grew up in my early years listening to the vicious anti-German propaganda through the war and even right up to about 1947, when suddenly we decided that the Germans, after all, were the good guys, and then we started the same kind of propaganda directed at the Russians. Now, I've been in Russia, traveled around Russia, too, and they're not evil either. So there are other things that caused the events of the 20th century other than that a group of people are evil. And so I wanted to tell the other side of the story. I started to read books, you know, I read all the books that tell the official story, and then I started to read books by Germans, biographies about the German military officers and leaders, and even books written by enlisted men describing their experiences. And I started to say, these people aren't evil, they're just like us, very like us. And I started to realize that the real story is almost the reverse of what we've been taught. And so I wanted to put it down. This Holocaust story is an example. You want me to tell you about my experience with the Holocaust reading? Can I take a minute to do that? I read my
Absolutely.
First book in 1960 on the Holocaust. I was a new officer in the squadron, and one of the officers had bought the book and passed it around.
What was the name
of the book? It was Treblinka.
Oh,
and
okay.
I don't remember the name of the author, but Treblinka, and it was a horrible book. I read it. It told all about the horrors that the Jewish people had went through. It was a death camp. Those evil Nazis would just use Jews for target practice and stuff like that. It was so horrific that it kind of hooked me, and I started to read every Holocaust book I could get my hands on. And I started to notice that, you know, there were conflicting tales in this book and that book. Pictures in different books had different captions. They would, for example, have a group of well-dressed Jews walking alongside a train they had just gotten off of, Star of David on their clothes, saying they're headed for the gas chamber. And then you'd see a group of Jews in the woods surrounded by a couple of two or three Germans with a rifle. And they're headed for the gas chamber. And, you know, you look at the picture and you say they might as well be headed for McDonald's for a hamburger. And the picture doesn't tell that. Yet millions of pictures were taken of every aspect of the war, every aspect, except for one thing. You won't find any pictures of people dying in a gas chamber or having died and being removed from a gas chamber. And you say, why? Well, maybe there wasn't a gas chamber. So anyway, I started to revise my opinion about that, and I got so curious about it that I went out to Poland in 1989 and toured the country. I'd been reading a lot about what happened there during World War II, and I went out and toured around, went to Warsaw to find the Warsaw Ghetto, and not much there left, and another camp, I forget. Finally, I wound up in Krakow, which is not far from Auschwitz, and my intent was to go out and see Auschwitz. So I asked the maitre d' at the hotel if he could connect me with a tour guide who knew the history of the area, especially the wars and so forth. So he took me right across the lobby, and there was a guy sitting there. He introduced me. He's a Polish history professor. He was 67 years old in 1989. And I asked him why he was doing this. He said he could make four times as much money as a tour guide than as a history professor. So anyway, I hired him for 4 days. He took me all around Krakow to all the German officers' headquarters, to the museums, and so forth. And then the last, we finally went on out to Auschwitz. And it turns out he grew up there. What a coincidence. He was a teenager, and he lived in a little shotgun house right outside the wire of this large Birkenau camp. There's Auschwitz I, and then there's Birkenau. And if you walk out on the front porch of the little house, you can see everything through the wire. Nothing is revealed. And I said, well, how did you feel walking out here every day to on your way to school and watching all the murder and brutality going on inside the wire. He said, that's propaganda. There was no murder and brutality. He said, this was a well-organized, well-run labor camp. They've got a whole ring of factories around the town of Oswiecim, that's the Polish name for Auschwitz, and Birkenau was set up to provide labor for these factories. They left in the morning to go out to work, and they came back in the evening. And I said, what about the gas chamber? And he said, more propaganda. There was no gas chamber. That was in 89. And that kind of flipped me. All of a sudden, I said, of course there wasn't. None of it added up to begin with. And that was one experience, but other experiences, you know, in reading books and so forth, and reading the other side of the story, you come to the conclusion that there's another side of the story that may be the real story. And so that's what caused me to start researching the book and then to write the book.
Interesting. I when I was 14, I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by William L. Shearer, and mm-hmm. I fell for it.
He was Jewish, by the way.
You know, I'm not sure. I put that in my book that he was, but
yeah,
I'm not sure.
He
was certainly a corporate journalist. He was an insider. But I fell for all of that. I just felt so terrible. And I read this book about Auschwitz, how they were, you know, what they did. And, I just felt so much compassion. But I was young.
Was my experience as well.
Right. Because we're kind of trained in our government schools to believe what we're told. And a book is an authority kind of a situation where, gosh, if it's written in a book, it must be true, right? No.
Right.
Nope. That's not the case. But then I learned. And they changed the sign in front of Auschwitz. They used to say that 4 million people were gassed there. I think it's down to 1.2 million. But if you look at the records, the actual records that the Red Cross has, 267 people, or 260, what is the figure? 200, it's very low of the people who died
very
there.
Low.
And a lot of them died simply because they were bombed, the railroads were bombed by the Allies, and they couldn't get food, they couldn't get a lot of the things that they needed, of course. And the people that were in the labor camps were actually very well treated. They had theaters, they had libraries, they had a hospital, they had a nursery.
Okay, that, I'm glad you said that, because the professor took me for a tour through Auschwitz I and then Birkenau, and he said the same thing. He showed me all the places where, you know, a soccer field where the inmates had teams, and even the Nazi soldiers had teams that played with the inmates.
Right.
That didn't sound like a death camp to me.
Right. Would they build a swimming pool if they were going to kill everybody? Would they even bring them to a camp if they were going to kill them? All they had to do was, shoot them.
The train ride.
Right. They wouldn't tattoo them if they were going to shoot them. Why? And give them clean uniforms? What is the point of all that?
You sound like me. Why would they bring in all these people, shave their heads mm-hmm. for lice control, of course, send them in the showers, then give them a nice new uniform and new shoes, and then tattoo a number on their arm for identity if they're planning to send them into the gas chamber? Why would they do that?
Right.
And people who argue the other side of it say, well, they gassed the people who weren't able to work, including children. Answer is yes, but there were surviving children.
Right, a lot of
the whole thing doesn't make the whole thing doesn't add up, and that's
exactly
what you finally come to.
All righty, we're going to take a short 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Hmm.
We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Attention RBN listeners. Dr. Ignatius Piazza, founder of Frontsight Firearms Training, and Fate have come together to allow RBN to run another fundraiser till the end of the year. We didn't really expect this opportunity, but thankfully, it's here and running as you hear this. We've set a goal of 500 donations by the end of the year, which averages around 6 per day, 7 days a week. When you realize all the folks listening to RBN all hours of the day and night, we think our goal is realistic and extremely critical to keep RBN on the air. If everybody listening will seriously assess their ability with firearms and then take advantage of this opportunity, we feel our goal is very conservative. Please take the time to look over FrontSight's website to get an idea of an amazing facility and the world-class training that's going on there. If this interests you, you likely will have like-minded friends that would like to know. Tell them. If for some reason some listeners are not personally interested, consider sons and daughters, close friends, nieces or nephews, top valued employees, inform club members, share the opportunity with police and fire departments. It's not too early to plan Christmas presents for special people. This fundraiser has come in an extremely critical time for RBN because the dire need for equipment upgrades. We're running on the spare tire currently with no money to fix a flat, and the fuel gauge is bouncing on E. This is one of the most valuable ways you can help RBN financially because you get Commander lifetime membership value that is 50 times your donation and can be passed on forever. How many times during life do you get to leave a legacy? See more details and contact info on our webpage, republicbroadcasting.org, and thank you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Benton L. Bradbury. He is the author of The Myth of German Villainy, published in 2012. Anyway, there were people in the vicinity of Auschwitz, citizens, residents in the vicinity, who actually came to the camp to enjoy some of the amenities. And anyway, continue. Ben, are you
okay.
there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
You want me to tell about my experience in the,
yes.
in the camp? Yeah, the professor took me around. This was in 1989, before massive numbers of people were going out there. There were about 15 people in a group, you know, in a tour, official tour guide. And he took us through and gave the official explanation for everything he saw there. For example, why'd they cut off their hair? Obviously for lice control and typhus control. But he said the reason they cut off the hair is because the crooked commandant of the camp had a contract with a mattress factory and he sold the hair to them. Had you ever heard that one before?
I have that. But I've never followed it up to see if that were that was a fact or anything, but I did hear that. And I think that I would think that it was more for lice control, because during any kind of a warfare situation, you're going to have a lot of you're going to have a lack of hygiene. And among some groups of people, their hygiene wasn't that great to begin with. And in a warfare situation, even during the Civil War, more people died during the Civil War, the so-called Civil War, from hygiene-related incidents and sickness than were killed. So it's, I think it was for hygienic reasons.
Okay, let me tell you about the themes in the book. Can we start with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, the book is I have two main themes. First is about the mischaracterization of Germany as an evil, brutal, warmongering people, which they are not. And the second theme is about the role that the Jews played, that is, organized international Jewry played in the horrible, bloody events of the 20th century. The Germans were credited with starting both World War I and World War II, and were held responsible for all the death and destruction of both wars. But I make the case in the book that Germany did not start either war, but was in fact the victim of Allied aggression in both wars. And in writing the book, I set out to prove that the official story about Germany during the National Socialist or so-called Nazi period is nothing more than a manufactured myth created primarily by international Jewish propaganda, in which Nazi Germany was falsely portrayed as an aggressive, evil nation bent on taking over the world, and thus forcing the Allies, that is us, that is the Soviet Union, Great Britain, and the United States, to heroically stand up against these awful Germans in order to save Western civilization. In fact, that's total nonsense. They did more to destroy it than to save it. Okay, to go on a bit, according to this official story, the true nature of Germany and the German people was revealed in this so-called Holocaust, which was a genocidal program, supposedly, to exterminate Europe's helpless, innocent Jews for no reason except that they are Jews, were Jews. And my purpose in writing the book was to prove that this characterization of Germany had nothing to do with the truth. The truth, in fact, is almost the reverse of that. And let me say that, first of all, these poor, helpless Jews is a myth. The Jews were not the helpless, innocent victims they have been made out to be or made themselves out to be. Though the Jews were few in number compared to other nationalities at that time, and even now, spread out throughout the West and the Middle East in what is called a Jewish diaspora, some communities of Jews in other countries, they were then and are now the most powerful nationality in the Western world. Let that sink in. That's a pretty astonishing thing to say. There are only about 15 million of them in the world, but they're the most powerful nationality in the world, and I think I prove it in the book.
Indeed, and as you bring up that figure, they're the only nationality or ethnic group that actually did not diminish during World War II.
Right.
Every other ethnic group, every other country lost millions, while the census records that the Jewish people have put out themselves indicates they didn't lose anybody, or their numbers didn't decrease.
I made this kind of a cynical paragraph in my book, and I said
Ben, we do have a quick 3-minute commercial. Let's pick that up on the other side. Be right back. Mm-hmm.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
All righty, we are back. And our guest is Benton L. Bradbury. He is the author of The Myth of German Villainy. Okay, pick it up where we left off. You're right in the middle of telling us something.
I was about to talk about a paragraph I wrote in the book about not more than 4.5 million Jews ever came under the control of Germany during the war. And of those 4.5 million, 6 million were gassed. 4.39 million got lifetime pensions from the German government as Holocaust survivors. And about 4 million of them immigrated to Palestine and the United States.
according to what they say.
Yeah,
they say
obviously the numbers don't add up.
I'm right, it doesn't add up. And I think that the figures too. A lot of the Jewish people went east, way east into Russia, before the Germans even went into where they would have been living in Russia. You know, right at they were already gone. So you're absolutely right when you say that they didn't ever come under the jurisdiction of Germany.
But I was saying that the Jewish nationality is the most powerful nationality in the world. And here's how they do it. They, because of their tight social cohesiveness and their propensity to work closely together in groups to achieve their goals, Jews all over the world are able to rise above their individualistic Gentile hosts. We all tend to be individualistic, and they work in groups, and they work together to achieve positions of power and control. A Jew can get a job in a bureau or an institution and work his way up to the point where he can hire people, and he starts easing out the Gentiles and bringing in the Jews until the whole institution is filled up with Jews. I've seen that happen right in a number of places. That's how they operate. We Gentiles are individualistic, and we're like the lone hunter, while Jews are pack hunters. And so these small groups that live in Gentile populations are able to rise up to be powerful, controlling minorities. And then these Jewish controlling minorities in all the countries around the Western world work together in a tightly organized international nation of Israel. They work together. And so these little subgroups of Jews in every country are really kind of subversive and work toward the interest of international Jewry instead of toward the interest of the country they live in. And that's how they become so powerful.
That they live in ghettos. But I think that they ghettoized themselves.
They
because
do, yes.
of that uniqueness that they felt and the cohesiveness that you're talking about. And oftentimes we think, well, oh my goodness, we made them live separately. They opted to live separately.
That's exactly right. Even here in Jacksonville, Florida, where I live, there's a section of town where most of the Jews live. They live there because they want to live there. And anyway, and in Germany, you know, they became very powerful in Germany. Kaiser Wilhelm was the king of Germany until the war ended and he had to leave. But he kept the Jews out of government, completely out of government offices when he was head of Germany. But when Germany descended into chaos following her defeat in World War One, the Jews swarmed. They removed all restrictions on Jews, and they swarmed over the nation like parasites consuming a cadaver, taking elite positions in all government departments, in academia, banking, finance, and in every other German institution. They completely dominated the press, theater, filmmaking, and this Jewish power and control over Germany was fully integrated into this international banking and industrial and trading network, which exerted inordinate power and control in all Western countries, still does.
After World War One, and this breaks my heart reading about the way that Germany was literally starved into signing the armistice, for one thing, and we just recently noted the 100th anniversary of the armistice on November 11th, and that occurred in 1918. And when they viewed the armistice, they thought, okay, we'll agree to the armistice. That means we're going to stop fighting. And then they didn't realize what they were signing. And when they were presented with all the bills and the reparations and the guilt, and then they were starved into, there was a barricade, a starvation barricade that Britain put up for 7 months. And there were
after
already
the war
people,
ended, but it's been in existence for a couple of years already.
Exactly,
which
exactly.
caused the death of about a million German civilians from starvation.
Yes, and lifetime problems for children who suffered. It just made me so sad. I'm against all war, but
Yes, this me too.
World War One was devastating. It seems more devastating.
Well, it needed to never happen. It didn't solve anything. It began the destruction of Western Christian civilization, in fact.
Right.
You wonder where Western civilization would be today if we hadn't had that war.
Oh my gosh. It'd be wonderful.
The Jews, to get back to their claims of being an innocent, helpless victims of aggressive Gentiles is a lot of nonsense. They are very aggressive themselves. And when they took over in Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution, they murdered about 40 million Russian Christians. And look what they're doing now in Palestine. These are not innocent, harmless people. They're predators themselves. What they had against Hitler and the Nazis, if you will, was that the Jews, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but in the because of the World War One, the Versailles Treaty and all that, Germany almost collapsed, the economy, and it was taken over by these Jews, and Adolf Hitler comes along in 1933, and he campaigns on a promise to free the Germans from this Jewish control, and that was his great sin. That's why the Jews ganged up and started this horrible anti-German, anti-Nazi propaganda campaign.
Right. And they began it.
As I said, the Jews aren't powerful in themselves. They're powerful because they control other countries. They rise up and become powerful elites, and then they use the military and economic power of the country they now control for their own ends. And that's what they did in World War II. And Hitler was pushing them out. He pushed them out of government, and they turned and was pushing them out of the country, and they turned against him.
Right, but okay. This problem. A lot of people say, "Oh, this whole problem against people disliking Jews began with Hitler," but it absolutely did not. There was a meeting that I referred to back in 2012. It was a meeting, a Congress actually, that met on September 11th and 12th in Dresden, and leaders of several countries came together to try to figure out what to do, how to handle this. This was in 1882, how to handle the situation with the Jewish people who were attempting to gain so much control.
Yeah.
So it didn't start with Hitler.
No, it didn't. Hitler, Germany under Hitler was unique in the Western world, and in that he managed to break the Jewish hold on its institutions and then to push the Jews out of their country. And by so doing, both Hitler and the German nation incurred the wrath and fury of the international Jewry and made these Jews determined to destroy Germany and the German people. And they had several plans. Most people don't know about this, but they had several very Jewish plans for the destruction of Germany and the elimination of the German people. And there was the Kaufman plan. Have you heard about that?
Yes. Yes.
And then the Lindemann plan, bombing Germany during the war.
Oh, my
gosh.
What a monster he was. What a terrible monster. Oh,
and
I'm sorry.
And there was the Hutten plan. Have you heard of Hutten? He wanted to, he had a plan. This is back in 43, I think it was. He said, breed the war strain out of the Germans. Their basic assumption was that these awful Germans were warmongering people and would always be that unless they did something to destroy Germany and eliminate him completely from the scene. He said his plan was to breed the war strain out of Germans, and he said after the war, when the Allies had defeated Germany and if they're occupying the country, they should send about 12 million of these German young men out of the country and then bring in an equivalent number, about 12 million of of other races into Germany to breed with the German women and therefore to eliminate the German stock.
That is certainly true. They kind of did it, didn't they? Yes, because they're coming in now. Yes. Well, a lot of people, a lot of these young men went into Canada because Canada invited them in. And of course, the Canadian government was in cahoots with, you know, with the program. And so they invited all these people, said, oh, come over. We've got land here. You can farm. You can, you know, have a new start. And yes, that is how they got rid, because they knew that these young men who knew the truth would start, they would defend their own country. But if you destroy the men that can fight, and it's happening in this country, you destroy the people who can fight for real freedom, then you've got an edge, you've got a trump card.
And then there was also this Ilya Ehrenberg, I'm sure you know about him.
Oh, yes. Terrible man.
The propaganda minister for the Soviet Union dropped millions of leaflets on the invading Russians and told them to kill all Germans, children included, and rape the women and then kill them. And that's exactly what they did.
I think there were 50 million rapes during. Oh,
and,
gosh.
Then there was the Morgenthau Plan at the end of the war, where they advocated deindustrializing Germany after we were occupying it by moving all their factories out and giving them to other countries. And they, in fact, did that.
Right. They dismantled them, moved them out.
They did. And reduced Germany down to an agricultural country. Of course, that would never have worked because Germany had too many people for the land that she had. She was a very small land area, couldn't even feed the people. So, my point, and to summarize all of this, is that the Jews weren't innocent victims. They were predatory warmongers themselves who wanted to destroy the German people and almost did. I think this Holocaust story was only a story to distract attention from their own predatory habits.
Well, they attempted to initiate that story after World War I, and it didn't fly. And so, because they told the same kinds of stories during World War I, how the Germans went into Belgium and were cutting off little children's hands, and they were raping, and they were doing all of these things, and they wanted to promote the idea that there was a Holocaust then, but it didn't work.
That was the British propaganda campaign. That's right after the war started. You want me to explain how Germany came to be in conflict with all these countries? I can.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, back after the Napoleonic Wars, they sat down and had a big conference, and they worked out a balance of power scheme for Europe, where they would there were great powers and medium powers and all that, and each one of these powers would have its sphere of influence, and all the other powers would respect it. And this worked very well for several decades. And Germany now was not part of that. There were some sizable German states like Saxony and Prussia and Bavaria, but Germany at that time was kind of a geographic expression. There was no German nation. They referred to all the ethnic German-speaking Germans that lived in Central Europe in about 300 different sovereign entities, from the states like I just mentioned to city-states, principalities, and all of that. Anyway, they just had numerous of these little sovereign entities, all of them weak. And France took advantage, traditionally, took advantage of their weakness and preyed upon them. And in fact, France took two provinces, Alsace and Lorraine, back under Louis the 14th or something like that, and attached them to France. And they were German-speaking German provinces. Well, they had a war in 1870-71 called the Franco-Prussian War.
Right.
France declared war on Prussia because they were afraid the Hohenzollern royal family was going to put one of their relatives on the Spanish throne, and France would be surrounded by hostile Germans, Hohenzollern. So
Wow. They
attacked Prussia, but Prussia won the war. And they
hold that thought. We have this commercial. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. We'll pick it up with Prussia. Be right back.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
We are back with Benton L. Bradbury, the author of The Myth of German Villainy, and you were talking about Prussia.
Yeah, I was talking about how the nation-state of Germany came into being after the Franco-Prussian War, which Prussia won. Otto von Bismarck, the Chancellor of Prussia, was able to pull all of these little German sovereign entities together into one German nation-state. And having done so, all of a sudden, Germany looms as the great power on the continent. And there were 65 million people in this new German state compared to 45 million in Great Britain and 40 million in France. And Britain and France, oh, by the way, Bismarck also took the provinces of Alsace and Lorraine because there were still majority German-speaking Germans and made it a part of the new German state. But France and Britain were alarmed, particularly Britain, were alarmed by this emergence of this superpower. And after they consolidated, they began to grow their economy exponentially, build factories everywhere, develop all kinds of scientific innovations like electric motors and appliances
chemistry
made out of electric motors.
And they're innovative people.
Yeah, very innovative people. And they began to export these manufactured goods and even to encroach upon Britain's traditional markets. And as I said, Britain had always kept it. They were the superpower of the world at that time, and certainly of Europe. And Britain had always kept a sharp eye on the continent to make sure that no consolidation of power ever developed which would rival their own. And that's exactly what happened with the emergence of Germany. And so Germany started to acquire an empire by colonies in Africa and other places and to build a fleet which started to challenge the British fleet. The British fleet was the biggest in the world. And so the British leaders, military and political, started to discuss how they were going to bring this upstart country down to size again, and military action was the only way it could be done, a war. And so France was also licking her wounds and was humiliated by losing the war and also angry about losing her two provinces, and all they talked about in their military academies and political meetings was an eventual war with Germany. And then the other member of the Triple Entente would have been the Russian Empire. What did they have against Germany? Well, Germany was closely allied with the Ottoman Empire, Turkey, and the Bosporus Strait was the only way the Russians could get their fleet a merchant fleet out of the Black Sea into warm water and to the trade world. And Russia wanted to dominate the Bosporus Straits, but couldn't because Germany had a fleet there. And so they said the only way they can get control of the Bosporus Straits is a war with Germany. So here you've got all three of the Triple Entente with strong reasons, motivations to have a war with Germany. But then you've got Germany, who's growing like wildfire and succeeding all over the place. And the last thing Germany wanted was a war.
Exactly.
But
wow.
Germany, nevertheless, later on was credited with starting World War One.
Right. Ben, we're at the top of the hour.
We will be right
back. We could talk for days, you and I. Be right back.
We could go on forever on this.
We sure could.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsite.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.